we are here at the Raw Wine Fair at 99 Scott in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and we are sitting down with the founder of the fair, Isabelle Legeron.
Hi, Isabelle. Yeah, nice to meet you. Thanks for visiting.
Yeah, we're so excited to be here. We've been tasting yesterday and today, and we'd love to hear from you about how the fair is going so far, your kind of thoughts and impressions about what it's like to be here in Brooklyn.
It's going super well. I mean, you know, we sort of sold out on both days, which is really brilliant news, obviously, for us and the growers. And I think, you know, there's so much diversity. I mean, you've been here a couple of days. You probably haven't tasted, you know, all of the wines. There's like 600 or 700 wines, probably more, to taste from all the corners of the world. So I think it's a great representation as to what's going on, the excitement, the diversity, the variety on offer. So, you know, the people are flying in from all over the States and also Canada and further afield to come here. So it means that these, you know, buyers and drinkers realize actually these wines are really amazing and they're worth traveling for and spending time over and meeting the growers. So for us, it's like, couldn't go better.
Great. What are some of the producers that you're most excited to have here that maybe haven't been at a raw wine fair before?
We always get tons of you know, new growers, in terms of pinpointing, you know, particularly one, this is always a very difficult question for me to do. But what I love is that more and more we're seeing, you know, an increased sort of presence from Greece. You know, for a little while we had maybe one producer, and now I can see that actually commercially people are starting to have more presence from Greece. The Georgians are always a really great, you know, sort of addition, in addition to the fair. And then also seeing, you know, such a strong presence from America. Is, I mean, obviously we get a lot of people coming from France and Italy, and these are, I would say, the traditional region for these natural low intervention and you know, organic and biodynamic wines. But seeing, you know, such a strong support from American producers, for me, it means a lot, because actually, yes, we are coming over from Europe. We were born in London, but I want this to be as much of a community-driven event as possible.
Great. And looking forward quickly, you'll be in Los Angeles next week for the first time that Rob will be there. Will you talk a little bit about that and the differences between that fair and here?
Yes, well, I'll be able to tell you more about the differences, you know, after the fair has been. So in a week, we're traveling, obviously, to L.A. I mean, look, you know, it's a foray into a completely new, different, you know, new city. Obviously, it's a huge place, LA, and I think it has tremendous potential. And I think I think the scene is just beginning. You know, there's a lot of bubbling excitement going on. There's, you know, a few bars, a few shops, obviously, that have been there for a while. But given the sheer size of Los Angeles, you know, there's room for a lot more, which is why we picked Los Angeles in a way rather than maybe other places on the West Coast, because I feel like in the maybe the medium, maybe in 2, 3, 4 years time, there will be, I hope, a real explosion in terms of places, you know, for people to go and eat at and drink at and buy the wines. And I've already heard of places, you know, of people in New York moving into LA and opening places, you know, in the next few months. So for me, LA, you know, the first year is always a bit of a test. I'm really excited. The importers have been tremendously supportive. Tickets are selling. You know, it's a smaller event, but, you know, I think it'd be really cool.
And how do you think the scene in New York has changed as you've been kind of involved here and even viewing it from afar? What does natural wine look like in New York?
I mean, look, you know, we've only really been doing this fair for 2 years. It seems that there's more places opening up. I think there's still a lot of space for potential. You know, even in New York, there are a few places. But if you look at Paris, which for me is probably the most developed natural wine scene in the world in terms of where you can eat, drink, and where you can buy the wines. I think in New York you still have to kind of plan a little bit. You know, your trip where you want to get hold of wines. I mean, Brooklyn is coming out as you know, a bit of a mecca with tons of places, new places, but obviously there's a lot, you know, other established businesses in Manhattan. But I think there's still room. I mean, it's a huge place. So in my, you know, from afar, it looks like, wow, there's, you know, there's so much more that can happen. It's like in London, you know, we've got tons of places, particularly in East London, but you know, you still have to think, okay, I want to drink great wine, natural wine, I want to eat well. You still have to plan a little bit where you go. Whereas if you're in Paris, the chances are you can bump into a place to drink natural wine actually quite easily. So this is where we need to be in a few years' time.
And just kind of from our perspective being here, we are so happy to have the fair here as consumers and as media people as well. Well, just to have all these producers in one place. And I think what you've done by gathering all these people has just generated this kind of level of excitement that the producers feel and the consumers feel. How do you foster that? What is the community like in kind of natural wine? And when you're putting the fair together, are you approaching people or are they coming to you?
So in terms of now attendance, you know, it tends to be growers who approach us and who want to take part in the fair. So we always end up with a waiting list wherever we go, you know, which is great. And at the same time, I wish I could just welcome everybody. But, you know, I think it's important to keep it to a sensible size. I think 148, which is what we have today, is actually, you know, it's maybe on the sort of slightly larger size, but aside. But I think it's a manageable number, you know, because you have to create a big enough mass to attract people who will be traveling maybe 3 or 4 hours by plane to come over here. You know, I'm not going to throw a tasting with 50 growers and expect, you know, people to come from all over the world, literally, which is what's happening today. So I think in terms of making sure that, and in fact, I was chatting with an importer yesterday who was saying to me that now this is the second year, they're already looking forward to the third year, and they're already planning to meet people. So they are now, people are organizing meeting here, you know, distributors, importers, the growers, they are kind of planning, you know, meeting around when the fair is in town, because everybody's here. So it's actually very easy and everybody has a reason to travel here. So for me, that's brilliant, you know, because it's not just about 2 days of tasting these growers, it's also about everything that happens around it. So all these meetings, but also the Raw Wine Week, which has been like amazingly well received. We have over 100 events happening, obviously in New York, in LA, but also in Chicago, in other places all around the US. And the idea behind this is very much about this community, you know. If I live in Detroit, I might not be able to fly over and come here, but maybe I want to be able to taste some of these wines. So try and foster these events, try and grow the community and get the events, you know, the growth to the community. So it's beyond New York and LA. And I think you just have to work, try and get everybody involved, you know, put everybody in the mix and then just see what happens at the end. And this is how we try and do it.
That's almost a nice analogy to kind of natural winemaking, kind of not adding or taking things away, just like putting it all in and seeing what happens.
Yeah, and also being really respectful, because I'm aware that there is obviously, you know, this stuff happening without us. You know, we're just another thing. So it's also about how we can blend in, how we can be part of this community, and how we can support the community without feeling, oh my God, we're the new kids in town and we're coming from Europe and, you know, move over or whatever. It's very much about how it can be a real win-win for everybody, you know, the growers, the distributors, the wine drinkers. So yeah, that's kind of the plan. That's the name of the game.
A few of the growers I've talked to have highlighted the importance of being able to tell their stories to consumers here. What do you think the role of storytelling is in selling these wines and building community?
I think it's huge. You know, these wines are very hand-sold. You know, they tend to be, or they can be, and they, you know, a bit more expensive because obviously they take more energy, more manpower, they make less. So you know, the price is fair, but also they're in small quantities. They can look and taste maybe a bit different. So you need to have, you know, people to embrace them and then pour them in like in bars and be able to tell that human story. And I think, you know, for me, it's all about the people. You know, really, when I decide I'm going to be drinking this wine, I actually think, really, actually, I'm thinking about this particular person, this particular farmer. I'm thinking of, actually, I really fancy drinking something that they've made, you know, and they're completely interlinked. I don't think you can really pull the wine away from the person, which is nice, you know, and it's not about BS, you know, it's like it's real people and real stories. You know, we've had, I think the wine industry has suffered a lot of marketing spiel to sell us the idea of terroir and, you know, you see these farmers everywhere when most wine's made without the human touch, or even like, you know, having anybody kind of touch and feel the grapes, everything is completely driven by machinery. So I think the story is really what it's about, you know, very much like when you buy your bread and it's really about the person who's going to be baking it and you're going to be going there and meeting them. This is exactly the same. You know, we need to stop thinking that wine is a food, not just, well, you know, just a drink. It's actually something you ingest. It's something made by somebody, you know. It's a real art, and there are people who craft it, and not to get too intellectual, but think of it more as a something that you eat and, you know, enjoy and digest.
Absolutely. And along those lines, I'd love to talk to you a little bit about labeling in natural wine. Thinking about it as food, you see ingredient labels on everything we eat, but it's so tricky in wine. Do you think that there's trouble in labeling, or do you think it would be beneficial? What's the future look like for that?
I mean, it would be completely beneficial. To be honest, it's very shocking that it's not a requirement. You know, why do we have to label all the ingredients? You know, and I know, you know, labeling is actually, it's not that straightforward. You know, you read labels and actually it hides tons of other stuff, so people can always cheat, you know, with ingredient labeling. But I think this would be a great start, and I think people need to get out of this. You know, look, if we went out, not here, but let's go to the nearest L stop here, Jefferson, and did a poll and said, how is wine made? People will say, oh, it's just grapes. People think all the wines out there is natural, and we need to crack this. You know, people need to realize that, you know, wine by the vast majority is made with actually quite a lot of additives. And I think if we started by putting ingredients in the label, people say, oh, it's not possible, there's too many ingredients or whatever, but people would then start thinking about what they're drinking, how they're buying, you know, and they would have a lot more, you know, they'd have power, they'd have the choice. At the moment, it's just a bit like walking into a wine store with a blindfold, grabbing a bottle of wine, drinking it, and then that's it. It's the equivalent of going to a supermarket, grabbing a piece of beef, regardless of how it's been farmed, just eating it, thinking you're eating something which has been grass-fed, farmed, you know. So I think we need to start being respectful to the consumer, to the wine drinker, because at the moment the wine consumer is not being treated very respectfully, in my opinion, by the industry.
And that has a lot to do with championing transparency. And I know that all these wines that, when you look through the catalog here for the fair, there are kind of things listed that a consumer might not think of. Can you talk a little bit about the process once you have growers that are signed on for the fair, doing some of that work to make everything very transparent?
Yeah, so that was the commitment we made, you know, which is partly why I called it raw wine. You know, it's really about that kind of unadulterated, you know, really honest expression of wine. And I was clear from the beginning that transparency doesn't happen, so I wanted us to champion it and actually show an example as to how you communicate about that. So it's very easy for us, because to be honest, people either do not add anything, or the only thing that they will add is maybe a bit of sulfites. So it's quite easy to be transparent when you have one, maybe two ingredients added, okay? So we have it easy. But what we do is, A, people have to follow a charter of quality. The wines being presented at the fair have cannot exceed a certain amount of sulfite total in the bottle. We ask for analyses of every single wine that comes into the fair, and so in terms of what the wine has in terms of sulfite totals, and then we disclose that so people know exactly actually how much sulfites have been added. Or if the wine, I think maybe we have a producer that uses egg whites, which means it's not vegan friendly, then we say it's been fined with egg whites, this wine is not vegan friendly, you know, because for example a lot of wines in the commercial world, sort of in the more conventionally made wine, people use, for example, you know, derivatives like fish bladder derivatives, so the wine is not even vegetarian, right? So I think this conversation needs to start sort of stepping up, and people need to be more and more aware of this.
And something that, as a regular cider drinker, I am excited about is that it's not just wine here. Can you talk a little bit about things that are not made from grapes that are featured in the fair?
Yeah, we have like ciders, meads, tea even. I think, you know, it's very much that same philosophy of artisan drinks. But they have to follow the same requirements. You know, they have to be made from organic fruits, naturally fermented, and they have to be alive, so, you know, a maximum amount of sulfites, and again we disclose how much sulfites maybe has been used. So, you know, there's I think it's really important to embrace, you know, the developments in the drinks industry, you know, with all this. I wish I had more craft spirits, or it's not something I've really focused on, but I would love actually to grow this and have a whole section where you could drink, you know, really amazing spirits made from organic fruits. I think, you know, people have this idea that if you distill, you purify, but you know, if you distill, you concentrate. So if you distill grape, you know, wine to make a spirit or even to make grappa, or then you concentrate all the pesticides. So I think that's the next step, is to realize that, you know, the world of drinks is in a bit of a mess, but they are, you know, in the little worlds, in the cider area, where everything is changing, and people like next door are making some really, really fabulous ciders, meads, cognac. We've got a cognac producer here, so yeah, it's the revolution is happening everywhere.
And it's funny to think of kind of where we are in natural wine as being a leader in that, because sometimes it still feels a little bit like the Wild West. But I think these other industries are really looking to things like this event and what you've done as far as the storytelling so far to champion some of that, especially in cider, but I think farm-based other spirits and even kind of in beer too. So that's really, I think it's very special that we can look to natural wine already, even though it seems to most of us, especially here in Brooklyn, like kind of a new thing.
That's good to know. I mean, you know, we all need to work together. We all, you know, whether you are making craft cider, but properly, or craft beer, but again, properly, because again, craft beer has become quite a big thing, hasn't it? And it's not really regulated. What does it mean? And there's not that many organic beers either. But I think we need to all work together, because we all sell, whether it's wine, beer, mead, spirit, actually we sell in the same restaurant or in the same shop. So I think it's really key that we pull together as an industry so that we can, you know, not win, but it's not a battle, but so that we can grow, we can get organized, and then we can keep on communicating about proper way of working, and you know, all these back to tradition and so on, which is so important.
So I was reading through your book and a little bit about your history, yeah. And there was a line about how you yourself are not a winemaker, and you've sort of ended up being a champion of the movement. I'd love to talk to you about how you deal with kind of being a face but also not a producer.
I don't know. I've never had this question before. So it's obviously a good question. I mean, look, I'm not a wine producer, and yes, I don't risk my livelihood on a day-to-day basis by making wine, you know, naturally or with very little. So I'm sure sometimes maybe I don't always value enough, you know, what it takes to make, you know, these amazing wines. But, you know, I was brought up on a farm. I was brought up with, you know, animal husbandry and making butter and making jam and making sausages and going into the vineyard and, you know, not having a lot of cash going around. And, you know, I am a farmer's girl, you know, I was brought up on the farm, and that's where my heart is. So I can really relate to this way of life, because that's how I was brought up, and I now live in London, but I'm hoping to get back to, you know, a more country-based sort of life. I think maybe what it, you know, the advantage, I mean, you, so the negative side is that I'm not always able to sort of maybe think, oh my God, you know, what is it like to actually lose your entire harvest because of hailstorms and frost or a disaster in the cellar. But on the other end, it also gives me the perspective, a very global perspective. So I'm hoping that the experience of traveling a lot and meeting a lot of people, both on the production side and on the distribution side, helps me sort of like provide an event which serves the you know, maybe the community on a slightly larger level. You know, I really try really hard to get the right visitors to come to the fair, and people who really get the stories from the growers, because, you know, I could have 5,000 people in here and people thinking, oh my God, what the hell are these wines, you know, and not really getting exciting by them. So the you know, what we work really hard at is getting the right people in you know, in that room. So I'm hoping that experience and the fact that, you know, I am in contact with distributors all the time, whether they're in LA, whether they are you know, in Mexico, whether they are in Japan, or, you know, I sort of like, I'm hoping that we're able to translate this into an event which makes commercial sense. So, you know, yeah, I think it's okay. Yeah. I think it's okay.
We were talking earlier about how, as far as the other growers go, they don't necessarily need someone else kind of down the street from them doing it, but to have someone whose focus can be on that broader, more global perspective is very important.
And I very often, you know, I have conversations with growers who like say, okay, we're thinking about, you know, going with this importer, what do you think? Or what is the market like in, you know, I've spent some time in Russia and I was able to sort of say, well, look, you know, actually some stuff happening there and maybe we could, you know. So I think I often get an email or a phone call or whatever, people saying, oh, you know, we're unsure about this, or do you think LA is going to be an exciting place for us? So, you know, we are able to sort of, you know, maybe, I don't know, sort of help with having a broader look onto, you know, and also how to tell the story of what they do. Because very often, you know, the growers, they're so like into what they do on a day-to-day basis that they don't realize like how amazing it is, or how sometimes to maybe tell the story simply, or how to, you know, we do a lot of work with the press and, you know, so I think we bridge some gaps, hopefully.
Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us and give a little more context to everything that we've been tasting and talking about all weekend here.
Well, it's my pleasure. It was nice having you. And look, we're just finishing in time before the rain starts. Apparently, it's going to be, the heavens are opening. So hopefully not too much. But thank you so much. All right, ciao.